Hi, I'm Chris Cotnor, executive producer of the DSR Network. We've been incredibly busy here over the past month. With the launch of TNR's Daily Blast, we now produce 10 shows covering foreign policy, national security, domestic politics, cyber and tech, legal, and much more. We've also just launched our redesigned website at thedsrnetwork.com. With all this content, there has never been a better time to become a member. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack community. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily, in which we look at some of the big stories in the world, try to talk a little bit about what they mean. I am David Rothkopf, joined as ever by Chris Cotnor. How are you doing today, Chris?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. And Riley Fessler, how are you, Riley?
Pretty good.
What's leading off today, Chris?
Yesterday, as we came on the air, we reported that a container ship collided with the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and the bridge collapsed. We have a lot more details this morning. The first of which is that the ship called in a mayday, which allowed law enforcement officers to direct personnel to divert traffic away from the bridge. And it appears that that had a pretty significant impact. It was early hours in the morning anyway, and you know there wouldn't have been tons of traffic, but it just appears that there was barely any, if any, at all. There were six construction workers that at this point are presumed dead. But this story, you know, I was pretty struck. I probably visited 10 sources around the world this morning, and this was the number one story on every single, I mean, I'm talking like from the Straits Times to the BBC. You know, it's a big deal. Well, you know, the implications of that bridge collapsing are pretty far reaching. We had some statements from Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg on the collapse of the bridge, essentially saying that, you know, we will rebuild. It's going to be expensive. It's going to be timely, but nonetheless, good support from the Biden administration on that. A terrible tragedy, to be sure.
Yeah. By the way, we are going to be doing a conversation with Pete Buttigieg live in Washington D.C. on April 23rd at 6 o'clock at the National Press Club. And if you want to attend that, reach out to us via one of the many means you can do that, or send an email to info@drgmedia.com, and we can reserve a seat for you. But act quickly, because these things sell out real quickly. The last one was with Jake Sullivan. We're doing one in a couple of months with Secretary Blinken. We do these every 6 weeks or so. I think it's a great time to be able to talk to Secretary Buttigieg. The one other thing I'd like to say on this is, you know, sometimes stories are not just the story as it appears. A bridge which tens of thousands of cars passed over every day, which shuts down the harbor in Baltimore, and which an accident which resulted in loss of life, apparently, of at least six people. Sometimes you just get an image, and the image is so, it gets you so viscerally. You know, how many people have gone over a bridge and said, what keeps this thing up? And what would happen if something went wrong? And, you know, there you have, in an instant, a bridge that has stood for decades, and then moments later, it completely collapses and falls into the Patapsco River. I think it's a big story around the world because it gets people in their gut.
I couldn't imagine being in a car and having like your kids in the car looking to the right or to the left and saying, "Dad, that ship looks like it's going to hit this bridge." So I'm really happy that they were able to act quickly. And just to add to your Pete Buttigieg comment, people can actually go to the dsrnetwork.com and click get in touch, which is an easier way to get in touch with us. And the event is free to attend.
Excellent. Riley.
So there is a new UN report highlighting allegations of serious abuses during Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And we have covered some of these reports before, but this is a new one. And this covers the execution of at least 32 Ukrainian prisoners of war between December 1st and February 29th, as was verified by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. So this report also details instances of sexual violence, electric shocks, and beatings against over half of the interviewed Ukrainian POWs. And that aspect was covered in a previous report as well, but it seems like there's even more evidence in this report. The UN also cited significant civilian casualties since the invasion began in February of 2022, with at least 10,582 Ukrainian civilians reported killed and over 19,875 injured. And these numbers are likely underestimated. They actually also interviewed or studied Russian POWs, including 44 that also reported torture post-capture.
Well, we've seen it with our own eyes. What Russia's invasion of Ukraine was a crime. The way Russia has conducted itself, targeting civilians, has been a crime. The way it has summarily executed people has been a crime. The kidnapping of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian children has been a crime. It's hideous. It needs to be seen for what it is. It can never be normalized. If you oppose it anywhere in the world, you need to oppose it there. And the United States Congress continues not to act to help Ukraine, continues to let these people in the lurch. We're going to have a conversation a little bit later today with a guy who has spent much of the course of this war in Ukraine helping the people of Ukraine get fed, deal with these inhumane conditions, even helping to deal with the problem that is faced by some of the pets and the animals who are left behind by this war. It's a remarkable story from a guy who was Jose Andres' right-hand man at World Kitchen, and we encourage you to listen to it. Chris?
During Supreme Court arguments, a majority of justices seemed skeptical of a lawsuit aimed at restricting access to mifepristone, the abortion pill, questioning the standing of the anti-abortion groups challenging the FDA's approval. Justices across the ideological spectrum, except possibly Alito and Thomas, appeared to lean toward maintaining the drug's accessibility, focusing on whether plaintiffs could prove actual harm from its availability. The case is pivotal in the post-Roe v. Wade landscape and aims to address the FDA's decision to expand access to mifepristone via telemedicine and mail, with broader implications for the agency's drug regulatory authority.
You say, with the exception of Alito and Thomas, but what I hear is, with the exception of Alito and Thomas, who are corrupt extremists who don't care anything about the law and are just making stuff up. And, you know, they were bringing up, well, maybe, you know, the Comstock Act, which was from like a million years ago, should be used to keep people from putting any of these kinds of drugs or into the mail. And, you know, that it's very scary. Two passing points about it. One, if there is a decision, and it does seem like most of the court had real issues with not just the substance of the case, but with the legal underpinnings, with the issue of standing, it'll probably be on the issue of standing. In other words, they're not going to deal with some of the broader philosophical issues. They'll just punt that down the road a little bit, which is something that they often do. The second point is that if you listen to this, it was remarkable, particularly the lawyers, the team of lawyers on behalf of the government, including the Solicitor General, were absolutely brilliant. And I just encourage anybody who does not listen to the Supreme Court. You know, you listen, sometimes you hear the extremism, but a lot of the time you hear real serious efforts to grapple with legal issues conducted by brilliant minds. And it's remarkable to see. Having said that, if Donald Trump gets elected and appoints a FDA commissioner who wants to ban all of these drugs, all they have to do is make an edict, sign a document, and do so. And that was a point that was brought up on MSNBC yesterday by none other, Chris, than Dr. Kavita Patel, who is the co-host of one of our podcasts. And it's a great point. And it means that, you know, there is a interrelationship here that we need to be even more aware of between the courts and the ballot box. Riley?
Thailand's parliament has made significant progress toward marriage equality by approving a bill that will legalize same-sex unions once it passes the Senate and receives the King's endorsement, which would position the country alongside Taiwan and Nepal as one of the few places in Asia with such protections. The bill extends full marital rights to same-sex couples, addressing the longstanding calls for legal and social recognition despite remaining challenges such as the terminology used to describe family roles, which activists tried to overturn but were not successful this time. And it highlights a pretty significant move towards marriage and family equality in the country. And it's really cemented its position as one of the more liberal places in Asia for LGBTQ plus members. So great to see, and hopefully they can continue that success.
Yeah, and hopefully we who led some of this don't reverse ourselves in the next few years, which is also possible for all the reasons we just talked about in the last story. Now, Chris.
U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin met with his Israeli counterpart and expressed concern over the number of civilian casualties as well as the limitations of humanitarian aid in Gaza. I see the reporting on this story, but what I really want to know is what he actually said. I think the conversation was more like, what the fuck are you guys thinking about? The United States has taken some steps, I think, in the right direction by one, abstaining from the UN vote that passed yesterday, and two, by not exercising its veto power. But we're still supporting Israel from a military standpoint. And I think at some point, you know, that has to stop. And, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu's already canceled his trip to the United States, which President Biden requested. I think we need to be or take a stronger stance on this.
No question. In a related story that apparently just happened today, one of the people who handles human rights issues at the State Department said, I can't continue to handle human rights issues while we are backing the Israeli government that's committing human rights violations. So they quit. There is no underestimating how divided the United States government is on these issues, although most of the people who I am with or talk to fall into one of two groups. One, I find what the Israelis have done abhorrent and think we need to change our policy altogether. And two, I find what the Israelis have done abhorrent and think that we need to modify our policy slightly but maintain connections with the Israelis in order to have some influence over them. I think the latter view is naive, but the point that I'm trying to make is that almost everybody sees what the Israelis have done as abhorrent, something that the Israeli government is blind to and still thinks that they can somehow persuade the world that what they see with their own eyes is not really happening. And I do want everybody to remember that, you know, the press, by and large, has been kept out of Gaza. We actually haven't seen it. And the death tolls, by and large, are lower than what they really are because so many people remain buried beneath the rubble. So it's not as bad as it seems. It's worse. It's not as bad as it seems. It's going to get worse. The policy struggles within the U.S. government on this, I think, will also become more heated as today's events indicate. As I mentioned, we've got a good show coming up a little bit later today on Ukraine. We've got lots of other fascinating bits and pieces coming down the pike. Riley, what does the Daily Blast have for us today?
So today's Daily Blast is all about Marjorie Taylor Greene's rage with Mike Johnson and how that is going to shake up the GOP.
Well, that's, you know, Chris's favorite politician and, you know, your girl, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Chris. Glad to see that she's getting the attention that she so richly does not deserve.
I frequently go out and hang with both she and Miss Boebert. They're a lot of fun.
They seem like fun people. By the way, folks, you know, sometimes we joke around here, but we're just joking. Chris can't stand those people either. Thank you very much for joining us, Chris and Riley, as every day. We'll be back tomorrow and every day with this podcast and all the others. And we hope you join us. And, you know, if you've been listening to one kind of podcast of ours, go try another kind. You know, go listen to the intelligence podcast or the defense technology podcast or the politics podcast or the one that Norm and Kavita does or our foreign policy podcast or our politics podcast. There's so many things here to choose from. Find a little more time, listen to a little more. I think you'll enjoy it. Until then, bye-bye.